Hello, hello, and welcome to Coder Radio. I'm sure you can hear my voice. I just have a little bit of frog down there, but that's okay. Today we have a great conversation about event modeling and event sourcing by the ever intriguing Adam Dimitrick. I'm sure if you know anything about either event modeling or sourcing, you have probably seen some of Adam's content. He does some really great videos and blogs and tons of LinkedIn. There's all kinds of stuff. If you don't know, it's kind of a methodology. I use that with a lot of trepidation for developing software. It's a little different than what you may be used to coming from a traditional background, but it is very interesting, and it certainly, in my opinion, is something to consider. But first, a few items of housekeeping. Keep cranking on that Discord. There's so much great conversation in there that is in the show notes. A little word of warning for those of you I know who are eagerly looking for a Switch 2. It seems that the pre-orders are going to be as horrible as one might expect. So by the time you hear this, you either will have gotten one or not. I would urge you not to go to like eBay and pay scalpers, because that just encourages more nonsense. But I understand if you do. And yeah, good luck. This is funny because you're going to hear this in the future. I'm recording it before, but I think we're going to see lots of Switch 2 related site crashes, issues, just like we do with all these pre-order situations, right? So without further ado, right after this note from our sponsor, here comes Adam.
This episode is sponsored by Mailtrap, an email platform developers love. Try for free at mailtrap.io. There's a link in the show notes.
Okay, and as promised, here's Adam Dimitrick. I would call him the sage, the guru of event sourcing.
Wow, Michael, thank you for that lovely intro, but I don't know if that's appropriate. I might say some things that even event sourcing people might find questionable. But anyway, let's do this.
they're not here to argue.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Isn't that great? So I guess the most obvious question is a little bit about yourself, Adam. I know, but just for the folks.
Yeah, I've been coding since I got a Commodore 64 as a 10-year-old kid, 9-year-old kid. I forget. I think I was 10. maybe I was 9. I think I was 9. It's 1984, so I must have been 9. And I'm aging myself here, but that's okay. And I got my chops by having to put in programs by hand because I didn't have a disk drive. So I kind of started doing programming katas at a fair early age, because when you turned the computer off, the program went away and I had everything written on paper and I had to retype it in every time. So I got a little sort of lesson in programming at a very young age, and but I loved it, and I've continued my whole life. But there's nothing else I'd rather do. I think it's an amazing way to express yourself by building things. And I think we have the same in other, you know, carpentry and all sorts of other disciplines, but having physical entities to work with, it's usually prohibitive because the costs, material costs, and the computer is really something that gives you what you want almost immediately, right? The speed of the chips is just incredible. And that creativity, being able to put together solutions and all that, was quite inspirational to me, and a great outlet of expression. So, but also just being helpful, right, in general. Finding a use and purpose in your life also is a nice thing to have. So I was very happy that both of those went together. And I went through the Dilbert offices, like most people, with enterprise software through the mid-90s to all the way through to the 2000s. I've done the agile adoption, you know, a hook, line, and sinker, bought into that, did test-driven development, extreme programming for a long time, was on the board of, or I guess, I'm not sure if it's a board, but Agile Vancouver. We brought in Martin Fowler, all sorts of people here to present in Vancouver. I'm originally from Poland. We emigrated here when I was little, around the time that I got the computer. But yeah, call Vancouver home. And then in 2007, 2008, I kind of got introduced to event sourcing, and it kind of blew everything out of the water for me. All the assumptions that I had about testing, about development, about how you abstract things and what's important and what's not, totally got flipped upside down. And I could never unsee that. It's I always use this cliche that it's the red pill in the Matrix, but I could not step back in the pod once I saw event sourcing. So that's kind of my brief history. I then went even more full bore with event sourcing. And then 2015, when I incorporated my own company that only did software development this way, because I strongly believe that that's the most responsible way to do managed information systems, which is really majority of the systems out there, your insurance companies, your point of sale systems, your online bank, all those things are just moving information, managing information, you know. So having this default way of doing things that's kind of doesn't deviate from solution to solution, because, like, you know, how many times are we going to do a point of sale system and everything's written yet another different way? It's the same patterns over and over again, over and over again. So I knew that there was a greater truth that would be, you know, better building blocks for all these types of applications. And event sourcing is kind of what I came at. And, you know, a couple of core, I'm going to jump the shark here a bit with your questions. But one of those things that I kind of realized later on after going through this is, like, really the powerful thing about it is that by default, you're not losing information. Like, that is your safety net. And I realized that this is actually more powerful than unit tests, which is hard for some people to hear. But someone that's been on the XP train since 2000 and the Advil movement for a long time, that took a long time for me to unlearn that is actually not true. But today I would say that event sourcing is the number one thing that would save a project compared to nothing else. So yeah, you're definitely going to hear some extreme things from me today.
But that's fine. So let's kind of stick on that point about not losing information, because now I just read a Martin Digler's new book.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really good. I will have a link in the show notes. I believe it's called Event Sourcing and Modeling. I may have slightly butchered the title.
Yeah, it's Understanding Event Sourcing, but inside it actually also describes event modeling, which is a better way of specifying systems that plays along those lines of never losing information and understanding that information changes over time. So this is something that kind of I coined about in around the time that I started event sourcing 15 years ago, but really formalized the method around 2015, 2018, really wrote the first article on it. But it's been the way that my company has worked in terms of specifications from the very, very start. And then I wrote the original article in 2018 and then made a dedicated site to it for that article to be hosted there maybe a few months later. So that's kind of my other thing that I do, which is the specific, if you're doing event sourcing, our opinion, my opinion and my company's opinion is that event modeling is kind of the easiest way to do it. And in that book, Martin does a lot. In fact, he wrote a Miro plugin to be able to get the templates for this type of notation to be more easily authored in Miro. A lot of companies do design and specifications and other diagrams in Miro. And so he's created a product as a plugin to Miro to help with this. But the book is excellent. I mean, the book is basically guides you from A to B, A to Z, from how to put together an event source system.
Yeah, it really is pretty thorough. And so this is the problem, right? You know, I've talked to you before. I've watched some of your videos, and I never really got it right. But that after reading the book, which I just finished literally at 7 this morning, and your statement there that it's about not losing data, that's the key takeaway I got from the book.
Yeah.
The difference is you're not, like, mutating some field on some database table over and over again and losing that data, where I would even call it a history. That's a fair way to look at things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's there's a lot of nerdy things that are really good in event sourcing. One of those is this, like you're saying, not losing information, but having additive only state, which means, yeah, you have immutable data, you have pure functions, like all these good things that we always strive for in programming, they're there by default, as, like, that is the only way we're going to do things, which is, you know, why a lot of people have a hard time to stop doing event sourcing. Like, once they start, they really don't want to go back, because they now have a perspective where they're like, oh my goodness, all those, like, easy CRUD things that I did, that was actually hiding so many of these complex things underneath, and even lossy things that, you know, once I update a row in the database, it's not so easy to get back what used to be there, unless I make some history table and then people forget to update it and blah, blah, blah. We get into a place where, you know, we really don't have something very reliable. But event sourcing kind of puts the cart before the horse in terms of saying that look, what happened over time is the truth. There's no arguing with that. And that's really good because it's not subjective. I don't see that you have a lot of design decisions when it comes to, you know, the influx of information into the systems. Hey, you know, I pressed the submit button on this form. I know that this data made it into the system, so I know that it's on the ledger. And that is the tiebreaker in all arguments. It's like, hey, this thing got into the system at this time. And every design decision is subservient to that fact. Like that's the tiebreaker, which is amazing for giving, you know, good cadence and alignment for how we develop solutions.
Got it. So I think this is where, because there's so much here, right?
Half an hour is not enough.
Right. I know. I'm trying to, and hopefully we'll do another one where we dig deeper.
Yeah.
I think the basic.
I have some awesome insights into event sourcing that just literally have dropped. So there's a lot of dynamic consistency boundary, which is the idea that you drop entities and you have a dynamic way to index the history, the information in your history for having just enough to do what you need. And it really blows out of the water the sort of object-oriented origins of event sourcing with entities and streams per entity and things like that you find in even Martin's book. I mean, we have to play from that basic understanding. But the advanced stuff we definitely could go into. And I do a stream all the time on YouTube and Twitch that kind of slogs you through the thought process. They're quite long programming sessions, but I spend most of the time explaining, you know, why some of the ways that we think about the data and behavior in these types of systems, we're almost at that E equals MC² realization of like how all information systems kind of at the core are built. And yeah, we're very close. And I think with main event sourcing frameworks like Axon framework, looking at supporting dynamic consistency boundaries, meaning, you know, what does that fancy word mean? Well, that means simply that if I want to cancel an order, I don't need to have an entity that has all the details of the order. So I can ignore all of these events and just say, look, I'm canceling the order. There's no need for me to replay a bunch of history about this order. The invariant here is just don't check anything, just cancel the damn thing. In fact, let's go a step further. Let's cancel it even though it's already been canceled, right? Those types of decisions. So, and going the other way, you can start to say that some of these things need to reach out to, you know, other things such as lookups or related orders from other people. If you're doing some other orders operation, it might be your company cannot withstand too many open orders over a certain threshold of money. And so that invariant obviously needs to look at entities outside the one you're dealing with. So the idea of this dynamic consistency boundary, I also call it context boundary because it actually works on the other side when you're not changing things in the system, but you're projecting information. There's a whole bunch of things that are kind of on the cusp with this dynamic consistency boundary. So event sourcing doesn't sit still like anything else. The information that you're going to get out there on event sourcing when you hit Google, you're going to have things that have the kind of the longevity. They've been there for a long time, so they come up as the top results, but they are actually quite, you know, not stale, but they're kind of the initial thoughts on it. And it's especially after, so Martin Fowler wrote about it officially in December 2005. And since then, it's been 20 years. And there's been a lot of insight of actually how to implement them. That original article is like theoretical, hey, this is neat. What if we could do this and that? And we never do the things that he said in that article. So the reality kind of like over the last two decades proved entirely different. But better, I would say that it's incredibly much better, much more simple, and much less distracting from some of these ideas that you can explore in event sourcing.
Okay, that all makes sense, but I think it's probably a little advanced for the folks who have never heard of it. So let's just I'm going to ask you a series of stupid questions.
Let's do it.
But these are ignorance, the right word, right?
Fire away. I get them all the time. It's all good.
So let's say you're a developer and, you know, insert your stack of choice. I guess Rust is becoming a meme on the show. Rust, right?
Sure. Crustaceans.
To adopt event sourcing's, what would you call them? Patterns or practices? What would you say? Do you have to, you can just keep doing your work in whatever stack you prefer, correct?
Yeah, it's not a technology choice. It's it's a choice to not lose information. So it's information management at the core. So I always say to people, it's like, if you make the choice to not lose information in your system, in other words, an update statement might zap your old record and you don't know what that was.
So, oh, I know what that feeling is. I know that pain. That's
yeah. So at the at its simplest explanation, it's really a conscious decision to be responsible with your information, which means that you don't know if you will need that piece of information in a feature that might be required 3 months from now. Not that you're trying to future-proof by overly designing. You're making actually a simple choice that it's very easy for me just to write down a record of what happened. You see this in ledger applications like a blockchain and all sorts of things. It's just keep adding, and then you can always do a reduce to find out what you need to find out. And that introduces the idea that there's only, you know, one core pattern to make event sourcing solutions, which means it simplifies the software development, because you're not choosing from a book of 50 patterns. Gee, I wonder how I'm going to solve this problem here. And then some of these things are ad hoc. We're always just doing a reduce over the past events, no matter what's happening in the system. So that gives incredible predictability. And in fact, it allows us to build on fixed costs, because now for each step in our workflows of the applications, we can say, well, the average effort is this, no matter how large the solution grows. And then we can pay the consultants a set fee, and we can pay, or the clients can pay us a set fee for each workflow that's done. And that ends up being incredibly powerful, because it throws away a lot of the human problems that we put into management of these systems, and people saying, well, I need to code review your stuff, and I don't like how you code, and all that stuff. That all goes away, because, you know, you have this open close principle in event sourcing. You kind of have a lot of projections instead of one single abstraction, and so therefore once you finish a feature, you kind of don't go back and refactor it to make it better. Once it works, you don't touch it, which is amazing, because it gives you that isolation from someone's crappy work, but it also can isolate really good work to have, like, as an example. So that's, you know, these are some, I have a list of 100 things about why event sourcing is good, but at the core, yeah, it's like just a decision not to lose information. And you naturally sort of boil that down to, like, well, if I'm going to make that a conscious decision, I get all these benefits. And the simplest way for me to accomplish that goal is to use event sourcing. You can go through the trials and tribulations of using history tables and all other schemes, but they all fall apart. They're not reliable. They're not putting the cart in front of the horse to really make it, you know, something that sticks.
It makes a ton of sense. So I'm going to give you a real world case and why I actually bought Martin's book and why I reached out to you. Because so folks who didn't listen to my long since dead Mike Dominic show, where I interviewed Adam before about this. And frankly, that's an hour of me just not getting it. So
it's all good.
That and the old Swift episode of Coder, just really that. Like, I know people, it's horrible. Swift episode's the best rated episode. It was probably the worst episode. I think it's ironic. You know, it's like the hipsters ironically listen to shitty bands. I think that's exactly what
Well, I can say the same thing for myself. Some of the stuff that I was saying, I totally don't I don't espouse anymore, but that's the industry. You got to move forward. So nothing to be ashamed of.
So I have a client, right? Because, you should mention your company, Adaptech, right?
Yeah, Adaptech Group. And we've been around since 2015. Our 10th year. It's going to be a big party in September.
Congratulations. So at the MAD, but we're in similar businesses, right? The software development for folks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I have a client, actually a fellow Canadian. Despite all the tension, you know, we're on the ground, we're still love each other, still brothers.
Of course, we just have problems with our leaders now and then.
It's you know, it's always the generals, never the privates.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause the issue.
Yeah, we're all friends. I just hope I can cross the border for Linux Fest Northwest.
Let me tell you something. If I can't get my Tim Hortons, there's going to be a lot of problems. So, I built this fairly large system for them.
Yeah.
They sell, I shouldn't be too detailed, but they basically are in a business where they have tons of inventory, right? Tons of small inventory. And that inventory expires.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. Right? So we built them a pretty traditional CRUD system. And what ended up happening is the requirements changed for business reasons that made tons of sense on their side, right? You know, they called us up. It was like a year in, we had already delivered the first system. And they're like, we got this thing, very important, really great for us, but we have to care about all this information that we, you know, this current system doesn't really deal with in the right way.
Yeah.
I ended up implementing what I called logging.
Yeah. Right?
Not like, you know, Rails log, not like, I know folks who hear logging, they're thinking like paper trail or something like that. Not that kind of logging.
Yeah.
But basically what I, because I, in my ignorance, I did not know about event sourcing. So I called them logs, right? So it's like basically you have a container of inventory and that container goes through, they have a whole factory, right? They have a whole warehouse, they have a factory, they have a warehouse, they have a shipping they do. That's real big operation. And you need, the requirement change, right? Now you need to capture every single thing.
Yep.
That an employee does, that incoming vendor does.
Mm-hmm.
Some, they have different kinds of customers. Some of their customers are affected, what I would call middlemen. Some of their customers are indeed, you know, end retail customers, right? They're like the store.
Yep.
So all of that has to be tracked for really good quality control reasons that, frankly, I think every business like theirs
should
be required to have, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
What I ended up doing was, let's call it a bin. Well, I'll just call it a bin, right? So what I ended up doing was making a secondary class called a bin log that basically took over. And as you said, aha, because you know where I'm going with it, right? Every single action on those got captured as one of those logs. Now, had I known the proper terms and about event sourcing, it simply would have been an event,
right?
And I probably would have used something like EventDB, but I got to tell you, Postgres was able to handle that.
Oh yeah, this is not a tech choice.
Not a tech
implement this in flat files. You know, I do that a lot too, just to show how simple it is. Yeah.
So is that kind of the, I guess, you know, getting struck off your horse on the way to Damascus moment for people? Is that how it happens?
Yeah, I mean, You hit the nail on the head about your realization there. And I think what the underpinning thing, especially in inventory systems, and you'll find that a lot of systems are like inventory systems where you say, oh crap, I wish I kept that. It is, you know how accountants have a ledger? They never like use an eraser to like say, oh, you know, I did the wrong deposit. So I'm just going to use an eraser and put in the right amount. That they would lose their license for that, right? So what we're doing in event sourcing is really treating information like accountants treat money. And that is a very old practice that's highly successful in running the world from the largest companies on pen and paper, you know, great trading companies that had ships sail all around the world. So this is a proven pattern of working really well and scaling really well. And that is, you know, this idea of accounting and accurate record keeping. So event sourcing is another form of this, is that what you're doing is that you're saying, look, I'll be an accountant to the information that my system manages, right? And so now, whatever happens, I have the breadcrumb trail to how I got myself into a pickle, or how I could actually draw upon a previous state, you know, 2 months ago, to really have the information that I need for a feature that the business now wants, but didn't want when I was writing that piece of functionality. So does that help you if you just think of it as like accounting?
It makes a ton of sense, right? Because I learned this when I first opened my business as a dumbass 19-year-old. If you make a mistake on a deposit and put it in the wrong account, you cannot just move it and be like, it's fine. You have to make an entry and be like, this was an error. So in my real world example with my customer up in Canada, let's say somebody mislabels one of these bins. You don't just do an update on the, you know, whatever that field is in the table, right? You would add another event and say, you know, update to insert string here. And then you could have like a reason for the event. And at least this is how I think it should. Maybe you tell me where I go wrong and say, you know, worker error, right? We made a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. Accountants have many patterns or what they put on the ledger as an excuse. So you can adjust the amount, or you can say that I have to cancel or reverse the complete transaction and then write and make another one with the proper amount because, hey, maybe my system needs to have that actual figure on the ledger. I can't have an adjustment because I won't find the actual figure that I was supposed to deposit. So in my, you know, in this system for accounting for this type of company, I would need to reverse entirely that transaction and do that. The example I'm giving is if you paid the wrong amount, not put it in the wrong account, but if you paid the wrong amount for whatever reason. I just did that yesterday, actually. I paid one of our guys for the wrong invoice. And stupidly, the amount was, you know, a negligible within 1% difference. So it all looked right to me. And then it's like, hey, buddy, you're like missing a couple of hundred bucks here. What's the deal? Got a new tax going on up there? I'm like, oh, yeah, crap.
It doesn't matter to you.
Or your wrong invoice.
Yeah, matters a lot to him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of things. And, you know, it's really, like, I am a complete novice, right? My Jedi robes, my gi, whatever, would be completely white at this point.
Yeah.
But I can't see a reason that I wouldn't want to capture all the data.
Yeah.
Right, because there's obvious.
Well, you've been around the block, so you know how clients' requirements change, and you know how their wish list changes and their roadmaps change. So, you know, would you rather have more information or less information to be ready for what they're going to throw at you?
Right. I could just rewind like a minute because it cut out for a second.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, if you have, you know, you've been around the block with a bunch of clients for over many, many years. So you know exactly how you can get new requirements or the roadmap of what they want will change in a few months. So now, would you rather have, you know, more or less information that was available in the system? Obviously, you want to be in a full capability to address whatever needs they want. And if you're not doing event sourcing, frankly, that's very complex to do for two reasons. Usually with a system that throws things away, you have a simple state that's unified, that's a single abstraction to carry out the functions of many points in the system. And that's always a compromise because you're not going to satisfy everything with one single thing. So event sourcing allows you to build very naturally multiple models that are custom built for each thing that's happening. So that's one way. But the other, the core thing is that on top of that, you have the source of truth, which is just the influx of information to support all that. And so for many reasons, event sourcing is the answer for future-proofing your solutions. And when you're in a business like you and I, that is gold.
Right. And I'm sure the objection, I think that a lot of maybe PM types perhaps would say here as well, but you're storing so much data. But one, it's not that much data.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you would even agree with this. Couldn't you, in theory, like every, I don't know, 5 years or something, if you really need to, kind of offload an archive of the events to something like
of course. Storage? Of
yeah,
course.
And also, how cheap is data these days? I mean,
exactly.
Database
is incredibly cheap. Yeah.
I mean, you could totally optimize. And this is, I would love to talk about this a little bit because I'm not very knowledgeable, but it was in Martin's book. And I think you've posted about it before too. These specialized databases for event sourcing that you could in theory run parallel to, you know, MySQL.
Yeah, you could. We usually have a live reporting version of the same events on the side to experiment with. And debugging systems is really copying part of the ledger out of the production system and rerunning the same code locally without needing to align the planets. You've been there before. We have to have like a fake service stood up and this and that and a whole dev environment just to like simulate what happened. With event sourcing, because everything's a pure function, you know, you're looking at what happened on the system because you know your all functionality is a mathematical function of inputs and an output, what event you got. So yeah, definitely something that you would find. But continue, sorry I interrupted.
No, that's exactly it. That's the question. So I guess my last couple questions would be, you know, let's say we've piqued the interest, right? Somebody's ear is perked up, you know, they're looking, they're like a lemur, or a meerkat rather, whatever System 76 animal themed product you want to be.
Yeah.
What is the first easy step that they can take?
To do event sourcing?
To just learn more, right? To
learn? Well, obviously, Martin's book, Events, Understanding Event Sourcing, is the number one thing. I mean, I think also, so it depends where you are. If you're doing something at home to experiment with it, the book is great for anything, but there's a couple of different things. You can make your own solutions, which I don't recommend grabbing a framework if you're going to experiment with it. I recommend just using flat files and just to get to the concepts as soon as possible, because it really is a low amount of code. And I would say that, hey, when someone hits a submit button on a form, you just write a JSON file and you call it 000, you know, four padded zeros for the first event, dash the name of the event, user registered .json. And that's it. And inside, you serialize what's on the form. That is your basic introduction to event sourcing, and that's it. Because, hey, when you want to show another page showing all the users that are in the system, guess what you're doing? You're reading all of those files, and you're extracting the information from the JSON file to just show a table of all the registrations. And hey, you know, when you add your next event called, you know, remove me from your system, unsign up, well, now you have your first sort of exercise in the reduction step that all the events or systems have, which is now you must have, when you're reducing those registrations, you now have to pay attention to when someone unsubscribes and delete them from your running list. And then at the end of all that, you're just displaying the current users. That is it. at the core, it's that simple.
All right. That makes a ton of sense. I mean, and I just, for folks who might be a little skeptical, if you do any work in regulated industries, which I do a lot of, let me tell you something. Having the data and then being able to be like, oh no, we can hit that new, you know, insane requirement, whatever, not insane, but you know, something we never thought of before, right?
Yeah.
Is a lot easier than, frankly, something I'm doing now for yet another customer in the States here, you know, in another extremely regulated industry, that I have to retrofit an older system to capture data it was never designed to capture.
Yeah.
And this is not like my customer will be a little upset with me if I can't do it. This is, they will not, if this isn't done by a certain time, they will not be able to operate legally. Because for folks of you who are maybe in the startup world or, I don't, you know, something less stringent, despite what you may hear, these people who enforce these regulations usually know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And are usually very thorough. So it's very hard to slip something by that is a violation, particularly when it comes to collecting safety data.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have one, but it's the same. They have a bunch of regulations. One of them is they're a union shop, and part of their deal with the union is collecting all this time clock data that includes stuff that other than clock in, clock out, and lunch. It's all kinds of stuff because part of their, they negotiate like every 3 years, is they have to give the union all the information.
Yeah. It is accounting, right? It is accounting. Like, you need to prove that you've done what you said you're going to do.
That the company complied with the union, and also that the union, you know, because the union makes promises to the company too, right? It's not a one way road. It's not a shakedown, right? You know, the union, yes, our people came in on, they did what they were supposed to do. They followed the regulations that you're bound by. So it's important. It's really important to follow.
Absolutely.
And the information.
One thing that people are kind of afraid of is like, what if you have GDRP or the right to be forgotten? Well, that is a business event to forget someone. And so you can encrypt, you can offload some of that personal information that's relevant for those laws into something that is mutable storage, where you can do that. And your event store really has records that point to where the information actually lives. And there's also crypto shredding and a whole bunch of other things that you can do.
Plenty of ways to destroy data if you
exactly, because I mean, when you unsign up from a website, you know, you don't want to leave your information there to the whims of the future of the company. What if it goes bankrupt and all these servers end up in a landfill and someone goes scraping for data and
someone buys them for a nickel out of bankruptcy to harvest the user data?
Yeah, you know, so it's, you know, legitimate concerns, but there's nothing in event sourcing that says you can't, you know, there's nothing that event sourcing can't do, because it's just about being quite explicit about how you store information, and it doesn't limit, you know, what you're going to be able to do. And, you know, some of the things that you said, like, oh, I have too many events, and like, it's, yeah, disk drives are cheap, but also like most frameworks that are out there, if you're doing an enterprise level application, like Sonic, which has their own framework, you have cold storage. So when the events, you know, you can configure a secondary cheap drive to say, hey, my older events live here on this incredibly cheap thing. And then, hey, if they're older than 7 years, you know, I'm just going to back them up to, like, you know, DVD drives or whatever your really durable storage is. And it's going to be the same thing as getting your old Visa statements from the bank. Someone's going to have to go to the vault to get those from those years ago. And you're going to get charged $35 to, you know, to get those copies mailed to you because you need it for tax purposes or something. It's the same idea. We've been managing information for thousands of years. And the only thing that we got recently is the distraction of of needing to erase data because our systems were expensive in the 50s and 60s, and we really didn't have the capacity. You know, I use the old tired cliche of like the IBM hard drive in the 1950s or 60s, where it's like the size of a small room, cost $1 million, and stored 10 megabytes of data and cost $30,000 to operate every month. So yeah, now we have so much more. So you just got to realize that some of the ruts in the road for how we write software are etched in like these really hard constraints when most of the academic work on computer science kind of started. And we no longer have that. We can basically make information systems the way humans naturally manage them anyway. All we're doing is doing what we did on pen and paper a lot faster, a greater scale. So nothing's really changed. So awesome. It's not very exciting, but
that's true. I would encourage folks to look into this. This is, trust me, it'll save you a lot of hassle years down.
But it'll also help you with AI. Like I noticed that event source solutions are very like what, you know how AI works. It's like, can I predict the next word? And I chunk these little things to kind of give me a complete sentence or a paragraph based on my context window of all this previous conversation. You can think of your lineage of data, your event store, as the same thing. So I've noticed that AI is incredibly powerful in this situation. I have very few hallucinations compared to the traditional systems, even on crappy old LLMs like ChatGPT 3.5. It already was doing way more work because with event sourcing, you're using, you know, this one pattern of reduction at each step. So now you have a really good sample of how you tackle multiple different situations from a business perspective. But what the large language model sees is a repetition of the same pattern. So it's really accurate to like nail the next one. So I personally see event sourcing and event modeling as being kind of the intermediate language or the new programming language that we're going to use when we have a high level of automation, because just like we stopped using assembler, we moved to C and compiled languages because that was way easier. We're now at this next sort of leap that we have, is that we need languages that are way more human friendly than Rust or C or whatever. Like us nerds will always have our programming languages, but I think there's going to be a proper evolution of how, you know, humans instruct computers what to do, and AI, sorry to say, is here to stay. I mean, that level of inference, the understanding of language by statistics is absolutely gold. And the way we take advantage of it is to become predictable and to provide the guide, easy guardrails to implement to take advantage of it. And I think event sourcing is incredibly good at that because of the storyline nature of it and the way that tokens are used and the way that we predict the next word in large language model solutions. It's very hand in glove with how you do event sourcing. So if you want to be successful in using AI and be ahead of the curve, I don't see anything outside of event sourcing that would be better, because you just have all context, like all information's there. So it can make a really good prediction of what to do. And I've been floored. Like the first time that I saw this, I fell off my chair. I was trying cursor for one of the first few times, and we call each step in a workflow a slice in event sourcing solutions, at least from the event modeling perspective. And I wrote, like, you know, we have our given when then scenario, if you're familiar with behavior driven development or specification by example. I had it graphically kind of drawn, like we in event modeling kind of do it graphically with events, like having these events in the past. When I try to do this command, I get this next event. That's a very easy thing to test, right? Pure function, really nice. So I had this little timeline of these things that can happen and commands along the way to kind of show that you could expect these results if you're using this command. So I wanted this command to be implemented, and I took a screenshot of, you know, in my Draw.io or Miro or whatever, I took a screenshot of that and I pasted it into the chat of Cursor AI, and it gave me all the tests and the implementation, and it all worked when I pressed go. It was, wow. I fell off my chair, and it got one more assert that I didn't think I would need when I had one of the tests was to rename an item in the collection that I was doing. I forget what the exact functionality was, but it added an extra assert saying that after rename, assert that you don't find the old name in the collection anymore. I'm like, oh, that's an assertion I missed as a human. This thing got it And this is the stupid version of like before we had Sonnet 3.7 or whatever we're at right now. Holy crap, this is gold. It got it with no hallucination. It got the implementation and it got all the unit tests. I'm like, what the hell? Like, yeah, I fell off my chair. I pinned that tweet to my Twitter account. So actually, I think it's my Blue Sky account. I think it's the Blue Sky account. I have it as a pinned post at the top. And that was my first realization that, okay, we're in a different world now. Event sourcing is the answer to how we're going to continue to take advantage of AI and all that. People don't even know how, with the right guardrails, that AI is going to be like how you discovered ReSharper or something, right? You know, JetBrains refactoring back in 04. It's that level of like, holy crap, I can't live without this.
I love it. I think that's a great place to leave it. Now I have one question that I always ask to wrap up. Very quickly, what is any tool that, as long as it's not a tool you produce, right? So it can't be something from either you personally or Adaptech that you can't live without. It could be anything, right? It could be your tea kettle, coffee machine, computer
program. Well, obviously. It's going to be something related with caffeine. Now you've blown my, what I was going to say.
Right, go for it. We have all the caffeine addicts.
I mean, right. The problem with your question is that the field's moving so fast right now. So many of our toolings and things are like right now are in flux. And I just mentioned ReSharper, and that's usually a go-to for a lot of these answers. But even that's been turned on its head because for a while they kind of missed the boat on like where Cursor got to. Yeah. But apparently now they're doing a much better job. I haven't had a chance to really play around with the new AI features of JetBrains products, and apparently they're really, really good. So I'd love to see that. But if I would say a developer tool that I can't live without, it would be Cursor AI. I think right now that is
good
the one that's got the, unless I'm, you know, this might not age well because JetBrains might have the better version, but I would say that. And a secondary tool would be something like Miro or Draw.io, where I could draw an event model as a set of specifications. And I much prefer event modeling to be specifications, especially if you're doing event sourcing, because that specification flows along a timeline. And I don't produce this. This is kind of like a standard way of doing it. I'm not getting any money for any of this stuff. It's not my stuff. There's been like so many different companies that have automated the way you draw an event model so that it's not just, you know, rectangles and arrows on a whiteboard, because there is opinion of like, you know, what you put down, you know, the blue and green boxes show you the input and the output to the system. And then the yellow boxes or orange boxes are your events on the timeline. And you can describe situations much like a storyboard for a movie. So I think those two things are, I can't say one thing, but I would, because I can show something like Draw.io through a plugin in, right. You know, Cursor AI is a fork of VS Code. So you can do all, you know, you can use all of the plugins that you have in VS Code. In fact, you can just port them over. There's like an import function. So, but I don't like VS Code because it's this Electron JavaScript app. So having been spoiled using JetBrains function like IDEs, there's some things that kind of irk me about the way that VS Code is put together. So, you know, I would say it's, you know, VS Code, or if JetBrains has caught up to be on par with what Cursor gives you, you know, it's one of those things that would definitely not move forward without. But and obviously, you know, AI is saving me 4 hours of Googling and Stack Overflow navigation. So obviously the large language models are paying dividends for me just to type a bit of text in my IDE and it autofills what I'm thinking. You know, that's obviously something I cannot let go of. So, but in terms of concrete tools I purchase, you know, so it would be Cursor AI because it includes the subscription to have the large language model there at your fingertips within your IDE to do everything that you want. But the secondary second tool is definitely something that can express what your solution does in terms of treating information, which in my case is event modeling, to be able to show on paper to people that are paying me money how the system will work, saying, hey, is it doing this or not? It's like a schematic. Like,
is this right?
Yeah, it's like, this is actually doing this or it isn't. Like, it's pretty much more black and white than user stories or use cases from the past. I'd never go back to making specifications that way again. I want to see screenshots of like, or mock-ups of the screens with data, and I want to see the example data, and I want to see how it flows to the system, and I can connect how they all interact and say, yeah, that'll work, and then get paid for it when it's actually, you know, working. So those are the two. So sorry, not an easy answer for me, especially at this
point
in the industry as we're going through Flux, but
yep.
But it's, yeah, Cursor AI plus anything that will support drawing event models well. That's
a perfect.
I can't live without those.
We're going to have links to all that in the show notes. Adam, we're going to have all of your socials and anything else you want to share there, as well as cheated a little bit, but all the tools you named.
I know. Well, they're one and the same. And honestly, when I see Cursor AI, I would say that I have to have that Draw.io plugin to draw, you know, to have my requirements and my code right beside it. And then because it's Cursor AI, it's calling out to the LLM. So that's a complete package. I can do everything I need in Cursor AI. So I'll leave out that. If you want to say one thing, it's Cursor.
Perfect.
Right.
That's
now.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on, Adam. And we'll have to have you on again. We'll dig a little.
Oh, more. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear about your journey through this. And I'm always available and I'm always chatty on LinkedIn. There's a Discord server where we talk about this all the time. It's the event modeling Discord server. So no money. You don't have to give me any nitros or whatever the hell they do on there.
Someone did nitros in our server. I don't know what it does.
Yeah, I know. It's same. So, join our Discord and fire these heavy questions at us. And we'll definitely show you through our, you know, our experience. I've been doing this for since 2008. My first production system in event sourcing was 2009. So, and a lot of people are kind of like, you know, more than a decade of experience in this that are on that server. So I encourage you to join if you're really wanting to experiment and really, you know, have some chats that are way deeper than what we got to here. Jump on the Discord.
Sounds good. All right, Adam, we'll talk to you probably in about a month or two.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And I'm going to say hi to your friends from Jupiter Broadcasting at Linux Fest Northwest too. So that's exciting. Looking forward to that. So thanks, Michael. Always a pleasure.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
See you later.
See you. Bye-bye.